With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City News Day. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning. Thanks for turning on the radio this morning for your agriculture news. Today is Thursday, September 21st. Coming up in today's show, there's a new number one ag-producing county. But first, the San Joaquin Valley Asian Citrus Psyllid and Huanglong Bing Task Force is recommending that growers in a portion of northern Tulare County treat for Asian citrus psyllid. There have been several trap detections over the past 12 months. Two finds north of Seville in mid-June are of concern. The task force felt that a treatment area larger than 800 meters would be beneficial. At this time, keeping Asian citrus psyllid numbers as low as possible is one of the best defenses we have against the future spread of Huanglong Bing. Now, we have more information on this along with the treatment map on our website. Head to agnetwest.com. In other agriculture news this morning, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer said this week that negotiations on the North American Free Trade Agreement are moving at warp speed, but may lead to no agreement. Lighthizer said, "We don't know whether we're going to get a conclusion. That's the problem. We're running very quickly somewhere." Lighthizer says the U.S. would like to reach an agreement and conclude the negotiations with Canada and Mexico by the end of this year. He refused to answer any questions about whether the administration planned to propose a sunset provision to automatically terminate NAFTA after 5 years, unless countries agree to extend. Lighthizer made the comments during a speech at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He also commented on China, calling the nation an unprecedented threat because of the policies that subsidize domestic production, create national champions, force technology transfers, and distort markets. Hurricane Irma's destruction is putting the iconic Thanksgiving pecan pie at risk. The storm ripped through pecan orchards in Georgia, the number one grower of pecans in the nation. That was just weeks before harvest. The University of Georgia estimates that 30% of production may have been lost after high winds sent pods flying off branches and blew down trees. For the second consecutive month, USDA crop production and yield estimates for corn and soybeans include surprises for the industry. Rod Bain reports.
Industry analysts were keeping an eye on USDA corn and soybean production and yield estimates for September prior to the release of the report. They were wondering if those numbers would again reflect higher than expected estimates, much like they did in August. This is when the Agriculture Department issued its first crop production forecast for the year based on field surveys, producing both production and yield totals higher than what industry analysts had forecasted. So as USDA Chief Economist Rob Johansson pointed out,
September is an important month for us. We have a lot better information on the corn crop, and soybeans is still developing through September.
And like August, USDA September crop production report showed trends at the high end of what the industry speculated for production and yield totals for corn and beans. Starting with corn,
we're at 14.2 billion bushels estimated right now. Trade range is also at about 14.2 at the top end, so we're right at the top.
With corn yields slightly up from August. In terms of this year's corn crop compared to previous seasons,
the third highest yield as well as the third highest production, and that could move even a little bit higher depending on data coming in at the end of the season.
Now for USDA soybean production estimates in comparison to industry forecast.
Estimated 4.43 billion bushels, so that's up 1% from last month. That would be a record if we realized. The trade range is at 4.42 at the top end, so we're a little above the top end.
With soybean yield estimates up slightly month over month, yet down just over 2 bushels an acre from last year. Now the chief economist acknowledges that the September reports by and large do not take into account the impacts of hurricanes Harvey and Irma on corn and bean crops in affected states. He notes soybeans in the ground would be most impacted as corn by and large has been harvested. In fact, for corn,
we are projecting records in Alabama, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Tennessee.
And Johansson also points to why corn and soybean production and yield estimates continue to increase, near ideal growing conditions in the corn and bean belt of the country throughout the summer.
We also did see pretty good production conditions for corn and soybeans through the month of August into September, and so that did push up our estimates for both corn and beans.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Specialty Crop News, brought to you by the Almond Board of California. Find them online at almonds.com. Plans are well underway for the annual Almond Conference, and one of the big events each year is the annual gala dinner. Almond Board Program Coordinator Industry Relations Rebecca Bailey tells us more about the dinner.
So this year's gala dinner is going to take place on the final day of this year's Almond Conference, so Thursday, December 7th, at the Sacramento Convention Center. It's always a great and fun way to close out the Almond Conference. And doors for the event will open at 5:30 p.m. And this will really just kick off a social hour, giving attendees the chance to kind of just hang out and connect with one another before dinner starts. So that social hour will be followed by dinner. And then we're also doing a live auction this year to benefit the California FFA Foundation. So last year was the first year we had done that, and we're continuing with that this year as well. Following the live auction, we're going to have a short program to recognize specific industry leadership, and then we'll move into the gala dinner's entertainment, which we're really excited for. This year, we're featuring the futurist Adam Trent. So he's going to put on a performance that will include basically a performance of magic mixed with comedy and music, and it should be perfect for all audiences, regardless of age. So we're really excited about that. He's made appearances on The Ellen Show and The Today Show. So we're just really excited to have him. We think he's going to be a big hit. And then closing out the night, we're actually having a cover band, and they're called Apple Z, and they're going to be performing a mixture of music from different decades and genres. So for those folks who like to dance the night away, it'll be a good opportunity for them to get out on the dance floor and just have some fun. So we're just looking forward to a great gala dinner.
You can get more information and register for the conference online at almondconference.com. This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
The Citrus Research Board invites the citrus industry to attend this year's California Citrus Conference on Wednesday, October 11th in Visalia. Join the CRB at 7:30 for registration and a free breakfast. Sessions kick off at 9 with a focus on ACP control and HLB early detection technologies. California Ag Secretary Karen Ross will address attendees, followed by a free barbecue lunch. Afternoon sessions include post-harvest technologies, biocontrol, and the very latest in citrus breeding and varieties. Pre-register for this free conference online at citrusresearch.org.
Set sail for Madison, Wisconsin and discover new dairy worlds October 3rd through the 7th at the 2017 World Dairy Expo. For 5 days, the global dairy industry meets at the Align Energy Center to view the finest dairy cattle and dairy trade shows in North America. Virtual farm tours, expo seminars, youth contests, and social activities make Expo an ideal location for learning and networking. Visit worlddairyexpo.com to plan your trip today.
Ahoy there!
Hi?
I see this be the spot for treasure.
Treasure?
Is that not a large X in your field?
Well, it is, but that's an alfalfa stand. And that X doesn't stand for the treasure you think. It stands for Harv Extra.
Harv, come again?
Harv Extra. It's the greatest innovation in alfalfa, giving me greater flexibility in my stand. It's technologically advanced to provide a wider cutting window, so now I can maintain a normal harvest schedule and achieve higher quality. Or I can delay harvest for up to 7 days for higher yield potential without sacrificing quality.
Aye, be that when compared to conventional alfalfa at the same stage of maturity?
You bet. And Harv Extra alfalfa comes stacked with Roundup Ready technology.
For unsurpassed weed control, I wager.
Sure is.
This has been great, matey. But can you point me to the nearest sea?
Oh, sure. Hang a right at the Taylor Farm and head west for 1,500 miles. Can't miss it.
We didn't invent alfalfa. We just reinvented it. See the difference of Harv Extra alfalfa at harvextra.com.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. Power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters. Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft. Lower hourly fuel costs. Reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
AgNet West Radio Network.
The House Budget Committee has voted 22-14 along party lines.
Your trusted agriculture news provider for the state of California. AgNet West's team of Sabrina Hill.
As crews continue to fight the Detweiler fire in Mariposa County.
Brian German.
Weedy rice has been a growing concern for California farmers.
And myself, Taylor Hillman. Join us every day to stay up to date with the latest agriculture news from AgNet West Radio Network and online at agnetwest.com.
Healthy soil can help protect your farm from drought, improve production, and protect soil and water resources. Plus, healthy soil can lower input costs, and that can lead to a healthier bottom line for your business. Contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today and unlock the secrets in your soil. This message brought to you by the NRCS and this radio station.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's Brian German.
Some industry groups maintain NAFTA rules have resulted in unfair competition that hurts California growers, but that's not quite the case for the avocado industry. As consumption increases in the U.S., it creates a potential for demand to exceed supply. Vice President of Industry Affairs for the California Avocado Commission, Ken Melbin, described NAFTA as a delicate partnership that creates a steady supply, benefiting the industries in both countries.
You've got to be careful because you need to have a stable supply to maintain a stable market. And if all of a sudden there's no NAFTA and we're back to where tariffs are in place, that could cause supplies to start to go elsewhere. And then you've got a void in the supply for the U.S. market. And if you follow that out, potentially consumers, their demand could begin to wane because either it's so high in price, the limited supply, or there's an uncertainty in being able to buy them so they don't try.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Kern County takes the number one spot in agricultural production. They saw a 6% increase in the 2016 crop report, which is a big jump from the 9% decrease in 2015. Kern County Agriculture is home to more than 300 commodities and three of the top 10 private companies for job production, creating jobs in food processing plants throughout the country. The top five producing commodities, table grapes, almonds, citrus, pistachios, and dairy, together make up 60% of the total value. Pistachios are new to the lineup, climbing up from the number 7 spot last year to number 4 this year, largely due to increased yields that nearly doubled from 2015. Now keep in mind, these are gross numbers. There's been an increase in the cost of growing food in recent years due to the cost of water, nitrate control measures, minimum wage increases, new overtime regulations, and costs of fuel. Kern County Farm Bureau hopes to use the number one spot to continue to advocate for its membership and show the value and importance of local food production.
Well, in today's livestock news, prices for most dairy products remain up from the previous year, but USDA has made adjustments in its latest outlook. And according to a story from Rod Bain, analysts did make some changes also on their latest meat production and price forecast, with those changes focusing on the beef sector.
Despite slight yearly adjustments, USDA meal production forecasts continue to show a year-over-year increase. World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Seth Meyer says this is reflected in downward adjustments in most dairy product price categories from the previous month. One exception was cheese prices.
For cheese, we've had a slight increase in 2017 on what we've observed about as pretty good demand, despite large supplies.
Butter prices are down due to increased stocks. As for price for non-fat dry milk and whey,
those are really influenced by how competitive we are in the global market, and that's been a pretty tough competitive market. We moved prices down for the rest of 17 and 2018 to reflect that more competitive market.
Despite the lowering of price estimates by product and class from the previous month, most categories price-wise remain up year over year. The all milk price is now at $18.05 a hundredweight, up a quarter from 2017. Changes in the Agriculture Department's September report on U.S. meat production and prices were minimal. On the production side,
we did trim beef production in 17 based upon what we observe as a slower pace of marketings. Even though we have a little bit of an offset by heavier carcass weights, production down a little bit based upon those slower marketings. We also made a trim in 2018, and that's based on a slower pace of placements based upon the August cattle on feed report.
Meanwhile,
pretty small changes in pork. Broilers down a little bit in 17 based upon hatchery data.
Likewise, USDA also made minimal adjustments in their price forecast.
We trimmed prices for steers both in 17 and in 2018, and that's based upon current weakness in prices that we have observed and an expectation that some of that price weakness will carry into 2018.
Hog prices for 2017 were also adjusted down 13 cents from the previous month, now at $48.25 per hundredweight. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. Well, a recent study by the United Nations Food and Ag Organization says cattle raised for beef production play a key role in maintaining a sustainable food system. Meat industry publication Meeting Place reports that the research essentially counters claims that beef production consumes too much human edible feed, finding that cattle are net contributors to the global protein supply, and concludes that modest yield improvements can reduce further land expansion for feed production. The research shows that 86% of the feed cattle consume is grasses grown on marginal lands, not edible to humans. And local officials out in Kansas have backed away from an incentives package to bring a Tyson Foods processing facility to the northeast corner of that state. The Leavenworth County, Kansas Commission voted 2-1 to rescind a previous resolution in favor of issuing $500 million in industrial revenue bonds to help finance the project. Plans for that facility are now in jeopardy after the county decision, which followed a town hall meeting that persuaded local officials to oppose the project. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
Agricultural research, a term that most people give little thought to. Consider this now. It benefits farmers first, but it has significant impact on efforts to feed the world, and American farmers are at the very top of that list of providers. As Congress moves toward a new farm bill, hopefully by next year, agricultural research will be a major topic of discussion in that congressional effort. Funding will be perhaps the most controversial part of putting that new farm bill together. Our university system must have the necessary funds to develop a study program for crop production. Not only has impact on the role of feeding the world, it has impact on the whole world itself. So the new farm bill will play a major part in the future of agricultural research. You'll see. And that's Ag Review for today. Everett Greiner, AgNet West.
The use of biostimulants in agriculture has grown dramatically over recent years and could reach $2 billion by next year. But there is still much that needs to be learned about the diverse formulations on the market and being developed that are applied to plants or soils to regulate and enhance the crop's physiological processes. Cindy Zimmerman finds out more in today's interview segment.
I'm speaking with Patrick Brown, a professor of plant sciences at the Department of Plant Sciences at the University of California, Davis. He's also chairman for the third Biostimulants World Congress coming up in November in Miami. The first thing I'd like to do, Patrick, if you just tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're involved with this conference as chairman.
I've been a professor of plant sciences at UC Davis for 28 years now, and my research covers everything from basic biology of how physiology of your plant functions, but I also in recent years have done a lot of work directly with growers and with ag chemical industry on optimizing the use of ag chemicals, in particular nutrients, in agriculture throughout California. So my interest in this is at sort of two levels. Biostimulants are a fascinating area of biology that we are only just starting to understand. And so there's some very interesting scientific questions in there. And also, it is the fastest growing area of agricultural chemicals in the U.S., and many growers and many of people in the industry are interested in how and if these products function and how they function and how useful they would be in their production system.
And as I said, this is the third World Congress, and you also were co-chairman for the first two. What prompted the scientific community, yourself, and the New Ag International to start having a World Congress on this topic?
Yeah, so over the last 15 years or so, I've seen a lot of agricultural producers, so growers and farmers, being approached by chemical industry representatives to try these new biostimulant products that have been produced in the marketplace for 20, 30 years now. And many growers were very suspicious of these products, thinking of them as snake oils or magical elixirs. And so there had been a lot of interest in getting university and research people interested in these products to validate whether they have a place in agriculture and whether they can be a benefit to growers and farmers. So my interest in working with New Ag and initiating these conferences was to attempt to get some science and some real data and some real understanding behind these products, both to help growers make their decisions, but also to help separate out the good, valuable materials from the materials that truly were snake oil.
Now, the second conference was held just in 2015 in Florence. Tell me a little bit about some of the information that came out of that and how that's helped the industry over the last couple of years.
Yeah, so at all of these conferences, we build the conference around five or six invited world experts. And these are world experts in all aspects of plant growth, soil science, and plant nutrition. They are not necessarily individuals who've done any work with biostimulants, but they are individuals who know how plants grow and how you can optimize yield. By presenting that sort of information, sort of the latest known information on what controls plant growth and development, it was clear to see that the biostimulant companies in the room were taking in information to help them develop better products and help them better understand the products that they have. And so we really have seen from the Strasbourg meeting, but also from the Florence meeting in particular, companies really to start to focus on the science and the integrity and the efficacy of their materials far more than we ever did previously. So I think it's done a lot of good in that regard. The conference has also generated a lot of activity in the sort of mergers and acquisitions area. So you do see a number of these biostimulant companies being purchased now by some of the bigger agricultural conglomerates, which is an indication that the field really is beginning to gain credibility and for a lot of people to see that they have this has a place in plant production and agriculture, not just in the U.S., but worldwide.
Well, tell me about what the program holds for the third conference coming up in Miami in November.
So we've taken a similar approach of inviting, in this case, six world experts in various areas of agriculture. So we have experts in the area of microorganisms and their interaction with plants, experts in soil chemistry and soil health, experts in precision agriculture, experts in stress of plants and how plants respond to stress. And so the goal, again, is similar to the previous conferences, where we try to point individuals and companies to the aspects of plant growth and plant productivity where a chemical such as a biostimulant or a product such as a biostimulant can make a difference and to help understand the processes involved. It's also an opportunity for the broader agricultural community to hear from the best of the agricultural companies that are making these products and hear them present the scientific rationale and the experience that they have with those products. We also have a very large display of scientific posters and posters from the industry demonstrating or illustrating the various products that have been produced and how they might function. I think one of the things we've seen in the last 5 years or so is a lot more application of rigorous molecular and physiological tools to help understand these products. So I think the industry as a whole is really at a critical point of gaining credibility and people recognizing, growers, farmers, producers recognizing that these materials have a place, but they have a place if they are well designed and well integrated into the crop system. And so it really is starting to be obvious that the more sophisticated, the more careful companies, the more scientifically rigorous companies will have a real edge in this market.
So as this is being held in the United States this year, who would you think would benefit most in the agricultural community for attending this event since it's so accessible to us here in Miami?
You know, it's pretty broad, I believe, in its utility. I think research scientists who have also been critical of these materials will certainly find benefit in attending this meeting because it'll illustrate that the field has matured. Certainly agricultural producers, those in the agricultural supply chain, so some of the large companies that distribute agricultural products around the U.S., I think there's a very important role for them. And also the industry itself, those who manufacture these products or those who are considering entering the field of biostimulant production. I think this will be an ideal opportunity to see what the market is doing, what competitors are doing, and where the opportunities exist. So it is a little bit unique in conferences in that it appeals to academic research as well as industry, as well as agriculturalists themselves, owners of large farms or corporate farming entities.
To find out more about the Biostimulants World Congress being held in Miami, the 27th through the 30th of November, you can go to the website biostimulantsworldcongress.com. There's registration and program information there. And don't miss it. If you're really interested in finding out more about biostimulants in agriculture, be sure to attend. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
The Citrus Research Board invites the citrus industry to attend this year's California Citrus Conference on Wednesday, October 11th in Visalia. Join the CRB at 7:30 for registration and a free breakfast. Sessions kick off at 9 with a focus on ACP control and HLB early detection technologies. California Ag Secretary Karen Ross will address attendees, followed by a free barbecue lunch. Afternoon sessions include post-harvest technologies, biocontrol, and the very latest in citrus breeding and varieties. Pre-register for this free conference online at citrusresearch.org.
Set sail for Madison, Wisconsin, and discover new dairy worlds October 3rd through the 7th at the 2017 World Dairy Expo. For 5 days, the global dairy industry meets at the Align Energy Center to view the finest dairy cattle and dairy trade shows in North America. Virtual farm tours, expo seminars, youth contests, and social activities make Expo an ideal location for learning and networking. Visit worlddairyexpo.com to plan your trip today.
Ahoy there!
Hi?
I see this be the spot for treasure.
Treasure?
Is that not a large X in your field?
Well, it is, but that's an alfalfa stand. And that X doesn't stand for the treasure you think. It stands for Harv Extra.
Harv, come again?
Harv Extra. It's the greatest innovation in alfalfa, giving me greater flexibility in my stand. It's technologically advanced to provide a wider cutting window, so now I can maintain a normal harvest schedule and achieve higher quality. Or I can delay harvest for up to 7 days for higher yield potential without sacrificing quality.
Aye, be that when compared to conventional alfalfa at the same stage of maturity?
You bet. And Harv Extra alfalfa comes stacked with Roundup Ready technology.
For unsurpassed weed control, I wager.
Sure is.
This has been great, matey. But can you point me to the nearest sea?
Oh, sure. Hang a right at the Taylor Farm and head west for 1,500 miles. Can't miss it.
We didn't invent alfalfa. We just reinvented it. See the difference of Harv Extra alfalfa at harvextra.com.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. Power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters. Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft. Lower hourly fuel costs. Reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
AgNet West Radio Network.
The House Budget Committee has voted 22-14 along party lines.
Your trusted agriculture news provider for the state of California. AgNet West's team of Sabrina Hill.
As crews continue to fight the Detweiler fire in Mariposa County.
Brian German.
Weedy rice has been a growing concern for California farmers.
And myself, Taylor Hillman. Join us every day to stay up to date with the latest agriculture news from AgNet West Radio Network and online at agnetwest.com.
Healthy soil can help protect your farm from drought, improve production, and protect soil and water resources. Plus, healthy soil can lower input costs, and that can lead to a healthier bottom line for your business. Contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today and unlock the secrets in your soil. This message brought to you by the NRCS and this radio station.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West, and now more of the agriculture stories you'll want to know today. We may not know until mid-October the real extent of damage to crops from Harvey and Irma. Gary Crawford has this report.
Even now, we don't know exactly what Hurricane Irma did to crops in Florida and into the southeast. For that matter, crop damage from Hurricane Harvey in Texas and into the southeast is also still being figured out. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says in Texas, Harvey battered and flooded a lot of cotton and rice acreage, but
fortunately, the main two crops that were in the way of that, rice and cotton, were largely harvested in the flood-affected areas, and so I think on a national scale, obviously I don't want to minimize what happened on a local scale, but what is going to happen on a national scale, may well be fairly small when you look at both commodities. With rice, you have the ratoon crop, the second crop rice. Some of that was still in the field and was flooded out across Texas and southwest Louisiana. And for the cotton, the majority of that crop was harvested and mostly out of harm's way.
But there were post-harvest losses of cotton when field modules were destroyed by winds and flood. Meanwhile, what you're hearing is the sound of the winds of Hurricane Irma. And as far as crops in Florida and the southeast, the actual crop damage from those winds and rains, a little less certain. The citrus crop was right in the path of Irma, and Rippey told us,
I don't think winds in most cases were high enough to uproot trees, so we may have escaped the long-term impacts, but we will have some green fruit down and unharvestable from the hurricane force winds.
The other Florida crop involved sugar cane, and the question being answered now is,
how much of the cane was knocked flat, partially knocked over? How difficult will harvest be?
Florida usually produces over half the sugar cane in the country. Now, at the time Irma's heavy rains were sweeping north into cotton, peanut, and soybean areas of Georgia and the Carolinas,
we had 51% of the cotton bowls open in Georgia, 46% in South Carolina, a little bit less in the neighboring states. Other crops did get hit, but should be able to escape, especially since it looks like it's a one-off. Heavy rain followed by favorable weather, that should help crops like soybeans as well as peanuts to recover.
Now, last week, USDA put out its September crop forecast, raising expected yields and production for corn, soybeans, and cotton. But the data used was mostly collected right about the time Harvey was hitting Texas and well before Irma. And so it will be mid-October before we get another forecast. USDA is going out collecting more information on how much acreage was not able to be harvested in the hurricane-affected areas. And again, Rippey says the crops to watch:
citrus, sugar cane, and cotton, with smaller effects on other crops.
In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by Agnet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.